Good morning, brethren and sisters.
Good morning.
It's good to see some smiling faces, some that I haven't seen for quite a while, have I, Colin? Right. Now, what is most surprising, brethren and sisters, is the detail Moses has given to the construction of the tabernacle. It's most amazing, really. And I'm sure that Chris was a bit surprised that I asked for the Exodus reading, but it's rather boring to be read this morning. But it is. I mean, if beginning at chapter 20, it simply says in chapter 20 that it begins, God spoke all these words to Moses. God spoke all these words to Moses. So what we're reading is what God spoke to Moses, all this detail. Isn't it strange? Yes, so in this 26th chapter, we have God's detailed instructions to Moses. So you see that first verse starts, moreover, you shall make the tabernacle with 10 curtains and so forth, all the details of the curtains, all the parts to be built into the tabernacle, all the things that were to be there, we can understand for worship, but here it goes into all the details of the curtains and so forth. I mean, you've got details of the texture, of the length and of the colour of the 10 curtains that were to enclose its contents. And there were to be also 50 loops and clasps to secure the curtains, and see that the 50 clasps are of gold, we read. In addition, as well as all the detail within the tabernacle of the curtains and all the objects within it, he's given all the details of how it's to be covered. Verse 7 says, to make curtains of goat's hair. How many goats were shorn in order to do that, or killed perhaps? Probably because there would have to be the hair attached to the skins to be secured. And these are to cover right over the whole top. And 30 of these are to be needed. They are to be longer than the tabernacle itself. 30 cubits, that's about 45 feet, or nearly 14 metres. And next are the details of the sizes of the acacia wood, the frames. You've got that detail from verse 15 to 29. And the need for bronze bases to fit them all in, it says in verse 37. And the verse that particularly stood out to me was in verse 30. What does it say in verse 30? You shall erect the tabernacle according to the plan for it that you were shown on the mountain. So up on the mountain, Moses was there all that time, and he was shown this plan and all this detail. And I don't know whether he wrote the plan down with him, but I wouldn't have remembered if I'd have been told verbally to all that. So, but maybe he had the miraculous power of the Spirit to remember all the detail that he was told on the mountain. But why all this meticulous attention to detail? You know, it led me to ponder the words of the first chapter of the final book of the Bible. No, Revelation. Yes. That is written when the tabernacle and then the temple were things of the past. No more tabernacle, no more temple. Assuming that Revelation was written after the temple was destroyed in the old age of John the Apostle. And John says in that first chapter that he... Let's go to it. He says there in that... final chapter. I don't know if I can find it. I should have had it there. He says, that he turned to see the voice that was speaking to me. And on turning, this is verses 12 and 13, and this voice that was speaking to him, on turning, I saw seven golden lampstands. And in the midst of the lampstands What did he see? He saw one like the Son of Man. And John is told that these seven lampstands are in the midst of lampstands, who's one like the Son of Man. And that the seven lampstands are seven churches. And the seven churches, or the seven ecclesias, the assemblies of believers, are named and they're described, and we often use them as a basis of exhortation, the detail that's in chapters 2 and chapter 3, and I see them as being representative of all the different types of assemblies of saints that have existed throughout the earth since that time. And each one begins with the same phrase, I know thy works, because the Son of Man was in the midst of them. He walked amongst the golden lampstands. He was there knowing their works. So just as the Father knew all the detail on the mountain and told it to Moses of the physical tabernacle and all the different parts, so here his Son is walking amongst the lampstands, amongst the ecclesias. He's here today. He's here with the ecclesias around the world because he can be everywhere present by his Spirit. And he can say, I know thy works. What he knows the detail, just as Moses was given the detail on the mountain of the original tabernacle in which God was to dwell in the holy place. And they were to come to that tabernacle there. It makes us think of Paul's words to the Ephesian believers, telling them that they were members of the household of God. Go to Ephesians chapter 2. He's telling them there that they were members of the household of God. This is chapter 2 and reading from verse 19. He says, now therefore, you are no longer strangers and foreigners. They were Gentiles, these Ephesians, like us. But you are now fellow citizens with the saints and members of the household of God, having been built upon the foundation of the apostles and prophets, the Old Testament prophets, the apostles, built on the foundation. So he's talking about a spiritual construction that must have some comparison with the physical construction of the tabernacle, I suggest, in all the detail that God knew of that, and therefore knew of the spiritual building. So, members of the household of God, having been built on the foundation of the apostles and prophets, Jesus Christ himself being the chief cornerstone. And I think we should know what a cornerstone is, in if you're a builder especially. Chris over here is a builder. Do you have cornerstones, Chris? It's the point, the focal point to which everything is measured within the building, in the old days anyway. They established that cornerstone and they measured out in each direction to get the building correct. The measurements came back to see if they were true to the cornerstone. And Jesus Christ is the chief cornerstone of the spiritual building. And then verse 21, in whom the whole building, fitly framed together, grows. It's not there to start with, it's got to grow. It grows into a holy temple in the Lord. And so our building here in Dandenong, over 10 years old now since it was started, the spiritual temple. It's growing. How much has it grown? How close is it being to becoming a holy temple to the Lord? Yes. So just as God saw the construction of a physical tabernacle in the wilderness, we see there is now a spiritual temple that he sees existing here in Dandenong. But do we ourselves see it as God sees it? Just as in Revelation, John saw Jesus in the midst of the assemblies of believers and knew their works. Each one starts, I know your works. So also Paul concludes his revelation of the true but physically unseen state of things by writing, "In him you also are being built together into a dwelling place for God by the Spirit." So are we conscious of the builder? Because it's impossible to build if we are not conscious of the one who's building. Are we cooperating with him? Moses is our example, isn't he? Moses' efforts to lead the people, to instruct them, to build the tabernacle, to bring them to the tabernacle. Moses failed, didn't he? Humanly speaking. Tragically, the majority of the people with Moses in the wilderness lost their vision of the spiritual reality behind the physical. And is not the same tragedy happening in today's wilderness, or has happened through the centuries, with those who claim to have the word of God? There are unknown numbers, as one reads back in the history of the Christian church, of different groups, like the Waldenses or the Lollards and things, that have been tried to be faithful to God's word at different stages, long before Dr. Thomas came on the scene. And they came and they went. And one asks, of the establishment of the truth through Dr. Thomas, is it fading away? Are we lost our vision? Can we not see the reality behind the physical? And the question, more than ever, as we've just sung, who is on the Lord's side? Who is really standing firm for him? We can sing this, brethren and sisters. We can be here physically. But is the spiritual reality there? All right, so much for the thoughts then that came to me as a result of our Old Testament reading there. What about the reading that we've had in Mark's Gospel? Intriguing. There's a puzzling statement by Jesus in today's 11th chapter of Mark. Jesus makes a triumphant entry into Jerusalem. He creates much speculation. He curses a fig tree and it withers. Why did he do that? Again, teaching a physical lesson to challenge spiritual perceptions. Peter expresses astonishment when they see it the next morning. You saw that in verse 21. The fig tree's cursed. Yes. And Israel is God's fig tree. And we know that in Joel, there's reference to this, of the fig tree. It's interesting. Go with me to Joel. We'll just have a look at one or two passages there. In Joel chapter 1, he talks about the enemies that are coming up against Israel in the days of the prophet. Verse 6, "For a nation has come up against my land, strong and without number. His teeth are the teeth of a lion, and he has the fangs of a fierce lion. He has laid waste my vine and has ruined my fig tree." So it tragically happened. He stripped it bare. He threw it away. His branches were made white. So in the days of the prophet, it was destroyed. In the days of Jesus, it was existing again in a sense, but under Roman domination. But they had their temple rebuilt and they had a form of worship and they were looking and expecting their Messiah, because the date times shown in Daniel had terminated and now the people were in expectation. Yes, it was something special there. Look down at verse 15 of chapter 1. "Alas for the day of the Lord is at hand. It shall come as destruction from the Almighty. Is not the food cut off before our eyes? Joy and gladness from the house of God." Yes, a warning of the prophet of the physical effect because they had forsaken their Lord. Yes, we look on to the second chapter. It talks about an invasion into Zion. "Blow the trumpet in Zion. Sound the alarm on my holy mountain." And there's an untold enemy coming in? Is it prophecy? Is it talking of something that's just happened or about to happen? It seems to be more than that, doesn't it? Because it says in verse 10 that the earth quakes before them, the heavens tremble, the sun and the moon grow dark, the stars diminish their brightness. The Lord gives voice before his army. His camp is very great, for strong is the one who executes his word. For the day of the Lord is great and very terrible. Who can endure it? And there have been days of the Lord in which this has happened to Israel of old. And there have been times, as history shows, that in some spiritual sense, those trying to follow Christ have suffered. And if you'd lived 500 years ago, there were those who went to the stake, like Tyndale and others, for their faith, and no doubt were killed. Yes. So the day of the Lord occurs at different stages in as kind of foretaste of what is to come, of one total day of the Lord. And yet it's interesting in this chapter that it also, speaking of Israel, has a modern day application, where it says in verse 19, the Lord will answer and say to his people, behold, I will send you grain and new wine and oil, and you will be satisfied by them. I will no longer make you a reproach among the nations. And we long for that time to come when they are no longer a reproach among the nations. Right. So we have, looking back again then at Mark, we see how Jesus foretold that God, while bringing on the world a time such as tribulation has not been from the beginning of creation that God created until now and never will be, and if the Lord had not cut short the days, no human being would be saved. But for the elect, for the sake of the elect, he says, he shortened the days. God speaks of those things which have not yet existed as though they are. But in God's eyes, he's already going to cut short the days since the end of the world. And so throughout my life, I've been in expectation. It's incredible. You probably heard the announcement, picked it up, that this week is my 66th baptism birthday. Now just imagine the world of 1949. The atomic bomb had been exploded, that Russia had now got hold of the atomic bomb, they were sending rockets up into space, Israel had just been established, the enemies were coming in on Israel all around and they were fighting back, and they sent a conciliator to try and heal the matter, and he got assassinated. We never thought that it was going to last right through now until this year. And because expectations have been raised and then dashed and not fulfilled, it's almost as though, well, yes, it's another false alarm, as it were, that Christ is at the door. I can remember seeing the Glad Tidings magazine with a big sign on the back about, is 1957 the year? How did they work that out? Well, it was 40 years, a generation from when Jerusalem was delivered from the Turk and Allenby went in, and those sort of speculations. So the problem is, isn't it, that we no longer have an expectation that Christ could return this year or next year. Challenge, isn't it, to have faith in God, that God is in control. Now, there's another strange thing in this chapter in Mark. Look at verse 24, where Jesus says, I tell you, whatever you ask in prayer, believe that you have received it, and it will be yours. It's odd, isn't it? How are we to understand that? Therefore, I say to you, whatever things you ask, when you pray, believe that you receive them, and you will have them. Depending which version you read, it's thinking the same thing. It's talking, do we understand this? You have received in the past tense? Well, the Greek tense, by all accounts, is in the past tense. So what did Jesus mean? Well, I conclude, brethren and sisters, and you may not agree with me, but I conclude that he is saying, look at the things you have asked for and received in the past. And for us, this is both a personal and a prophecies we have seen being fulfilled, that I have seen being fulfilled in that sense, things that have happened. And therefore, as a result, we pray with confidence, convinced that God is in control and he will continue to act. Finally, we note that how in the next verse he tells us to make sure whenever you stand praying, there's something to be done. Not just praying to God for him to act, but forgive if you have anything against anyone, so that your Father also who is in heaven may forgive you your trespasses. Yes. So the spirit of forgiveness as the Father has extended to us as we take of these emblems is to be our spirit towards one another. And tragically, I've seen in my life in the truth, divisions heal, new divisions come, and so it goes on, fragmentation. But it seems that the fragmentation of the ecclesias, as you look back on them, is a challenge to fresh growth. And fresh growth occurs. It's the way God is testing us out as to whether we're really Christ-like. Without that testing, we wouldn't grow. And we've got to therefore look wisely at things when they go wrong and see the bigger picture of our growth. So, when you stand praying, forgive. Now, the Greek word here does not mean stand in the physical sense. It is the only time the word occurs in the Gospels at all. But Paul uses it 7 times, and I want to bring my exhortation to its conclusion by looking at 2 of the examples of this. And the first one is in 1 Corinthians chapter 16. In 1 Corinthians chapter 16, we have Paul's point. He's talking to, writing really, about the work that Timothy had to do when he was in Corinth. Verse 10, and if Timothy comes, see that he may be with you without fear, for he does the work of the Lord as I do also. He's training the young brother to follow in his footsteps, and so we try to do the same, not knowing when the Lord is coming. Therefore, he says, let no one despise him, but send him on his journey in peace, that he may come to me, for I am waiting for him to come with the brethren. He's waiting for news. But today we have instant news all the time. We just turn on our computer and so forth. Quite different when I first came to Australia and when I first went to India. There was no instant news. Things were much slower. I remember Brother Tim sending parcels to India when he first went there. One of them took 2 years to get there. Things are so different now. So we're waiting on news. Paul was waiting for him to come. Now, he says, now concerning our brother Apollos, I strongly urged him to come to you with the brethren, but he was quite unwilling to come at this time. However, he will come when he has a convenient time. And then he says, note this point, watch, stand fast in the faith, be brave, be strong, let all that you do be done with love. That's an exhortation for you to take home with you, to me, to you. Yes, watch. What are we watching for? We're not losing our vision that Christ's coming could be tomorrow, or tonight, for that matter. But stand fast in the faith. But the word watch applies to us individually. Remember when Jesus was in the Garden of Gethsemane and he was praying and he was talking to his, came back to his disciples and found them asleep. And on one occasion he came back, or the final occasion, he said, Could you not watch with me for 1 hour? There's the little clue, watch with me. Jesus was in a desperate strait. Father, spare me from this hour, but not my will, but your be done. He wanted his disciples, he wanted to feel them being with him and understanding and giving support. If this world is going to be falling apart, as the prophecies say, we're going to need to watch with one another to keep ourselves strong until our faith is turned to sight. Turned to sight, yes. So that's one sense of being strong. And the other passage is in Philippians. Philippians chapter 1. Philippians chapter 1, anyway, I've got it noted down here. In the first chapter, at verse 27, he says, I may hear of you, to the Philippians, that you are standing firm in one spirit, with one mind, striving side by side for the faith. Repeat that. He wants to hear from them. No emails. I want to hear. I want some messages brought to me that you are standing firm in one spirit. So it's spiritual standing, isn't it? With one mind, striving side by side, a united ecclesia, helping one another, side by side for the faith. So, brethren and sisters, let us all be sure and certain that our prayers will be answered, because we have past experiences to build upon, and we will therefore stand firm in the faith until he comes.